We are Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
There was a moment in late college where I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Right.
And that was really disorienting.
Right.
Exactly. Sort of like, this is the only thing I think is that is inside of me.
Yeah.
And now I look back on that and I'm like, oh, well, that's what it feels like to be called.
Yes, precisely.
And now I'm able to help people think about recognizing that sort of inner thing.
Yes.
But when you start feeling it, it's so disorienting because you're like, I graduated with a philosophy degree. Totally. I'm like making cappuccinos and I have no other plans, you know?
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. This season, we have a number of incredible guests lined up for you, and we're excited to let you know that this season's episodes will also be available as videos. So subscribe on YouTube and never miss an episode. On today's episode, Jay talks with Jared Boyd, a vineyard pastor and the founding director of the Order of the Common Life. Let's listen in.
Well, we've known each other a very long time. I was thinking the other day about how I think it was at the regional conference. We were standing in the bar area. I think it was with Clay Harrington, maybe, and with Matt Massey.
Matt Massey, yeah.
talking about youth group, Jared. And of course, we knew each other in college. And so, like, if we just wanted to spend hours talking about your story and, you know, really what amounts to a gag reel of fun things involving Jared Boyd, we could do it. But we have to be a little more serious than that. But I want to hear some of your story and then, of course, lead to the work that you're doing now, because you're doing really important stuff that's really serving the vineyard and really the whole body of Christ. I mean, you're famous enough now that you popped up in, on one of my feeds for the class.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the algorithm,
Yeah.
that we know each other, but it popped up. I was like, oh, look at that. Look at that, Jared. You're just popping up. But so let's start with where you were born and grew up. That's a good place to start.
Yeah, I grew up in just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, in Mason, Ohio.
Why Mason? What is in Mason that makes a person live there?
Well, my parents lived there, so that was convenient.
Them, I mean them. What makes them?
I was just living in the home I was born.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't have a choice in the matter. Yeah, right.
Kings Island is there. Okay. That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
So I don't know why my parents chose Mason, actually. I have no idea.
Did they grow up around there?
No, my parents grew up. My dad grew up in Xenia, Ohio.
Okay, not that far from there.
Yeah, so I think my dad came to Cincinnati for work when I was like 2.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so grew up in Mason, Ohio, went to church in the Tri-County area, actually right near where Vineyard Cincinnati is right now.
Oh, really? So you grew up doing all the church things. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I grew up in the Nazarene Church about 3 miles from the Cincinnati Vineyard.
Wow. And church like a big part of life? Was it like a thing?
Yeah,
we're all about, or is it like, I guess we go and I might know some people.
It's kind of somewhere in between. It's interesting. Mm. It felt like a big part of life in the moment. Mm-hmm. But then looking back, it feels a little bit more like this is something that we were very adamant to do, but we didn't talk much about it.
Right.
You know, and that's fine, but we were like Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night kind of crew.
So yeah, you were in. I mean, that's
so yeah.
Yeah.
And it was great. I came to faith in the Nazarene Church through, you know, good old fashioned altar call.
Nice.
And felt pulled to the front, came on my knees and somebody laid their hands on me and prayed for me. And I had what I now know is a profound encounter with the Holy Spirit at like the age of 12. But, you know, I was in a Nazarene church, so they didn't really know what's going on.
Yeah, they don't say that. They wouldn't say it like that. Yeah, right.
But it was a wonderful church to grow up in. Mm. And and then at the age of 16 is when I started coming to the Vineyard in Cincinnati.
Ah, youth group.
So, no, actually just came on like a Saturday night.
At 16, you're just like, you know what?
At 16.
I'm just going to drive over here.
Yeah. Yeah. I had met Matt Massey and he was sort of getting involved over there. And, you know, this is sort of back in the day, Dave Workman was like leading worship. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm pretty sure singing some Hootie and the Blowfish on a Sunday morning, like
checks out. Yeah.
Steve Shrogren was doing the servant evangelism thing in Cincinnati and was really having an impact on the city. Like it was really like everyone knew like, oh, there's like a church passing out Coke or coffee or whatever it is. And I was intrigued by that. So I showed up at the Vineyard in 1994.
Oh, wow. Okay. So wait, let's back up a little bit. So what kind of kid was Jared? Is Jared like a, you know, when you think about all the high school, like stereotypes, you've got like, you know, like the Breakfast Club categories of humans. What was like, this is what's fun for me. This is the kind of friends I hang out with.
Yeah, I had, I was a wrestler for half of my high school years. Mm-hmm. And I played soccer and I did theater. So I was like really highly involved.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a lot of things. Yeah.
Class president, all the kind of just, all the things. Like I just did everything I possibly could.
Just overachieving. Class president, theater,
probably. Sports. Yeah. I was really busy.
Were your friends mostly circled around? Because obviously you're academic, if you're class president, are you forming your friendships around faith, around sports, a little bit of everything around?
It was a little bit of everything. So I had a core group of guys who, you know, we did the, you know, Bible study stuff together.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, we started like a Bible study at my friend's house in high school.
Oh, wow.
Matt Massey helped us start.
Wow. So
this is probably mid 90s. And this thing was like 70 kids, you know?
Wow.
And then I had another set of friends connected to soccer and another set of friends connected to theater. And so, was busy. It was a full, I look back on that. I'm like, man, I was.
Yeah.
It's full life over there.
That is a lot. Okay. So then you're rolling around inside of this big Hootie and the Blowfish, passing out Cokes. Sort of charismatic thing. And are your folks like, that's cool. Yeah. Go to that church. Or are they like, hey, what happened?
They were so open-handed. They just, I just came back from my first time going to the Vineyard. And I was just like, I think I'm going to go here. This is going to be my new church.
Wow.
And they were like, that's great. You should do that.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
It really is. I mean,
I'm so grateful for their posture towards that. But I think they could see that I was encountering something there that I wasn't getting in the other space.
Totally.
So
yeah,
I think I commend them for that.
So you have this growing Bible study, super active life. You're getting toward the end of high school. Are you thinking, what do you think? Because, you know, there's always this horrible moment when you're getting into high school. Like, I guess I got to go to college. And people start, you start musing about what you think you're going to do. Like, I think I'm going to fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Were you thinking more like a ministry thing? Are you thinking more like, you have to pick degrees and those kinds of things. How are you starting to think as you're getting out of high school, going to college?
Yeah, I was really drawn to architecture. Mm-hmm. So I started as an architecture major at Ohio State. I thought for sure I was going to be an architect or an engineer. Mm-hmm. And I went to Ohio State, got like a year into the architecture program and was like, this is probably not for me. All hours at night, you know, you've heard about all the stories of architecture students like in the studio. And so then I was pretty disoriented. I was like, I have no idea what I was going to do. But at the same time, I had gotten involved in what is now called CREW, Campus Crusade, and was feeling a lot of life there. Felt like, man, maybe I will do ministry. This feels like a really interesting thing. Mm-hmm. And so I began to think about, well, what would most serve that? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I bounced around psychology, human development, and landed on philosophy, which is how you and I,
I think,
overlapped initially.
Yeah, that's
So then I landed on philosophy and studied philosophy at Ohio State because I thought this would be great for being in ministry.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry. It's going to bother me if I don't bring it up. So
no, that's okay.
So you're leading a Bible study with 70 kids and nobody says to you, maybe you should be a pastor. No, I'm trying to get my mind around that. I'm thinking like for me, if I have like some guy in a high school leading a 70, I'd be like, hey man, like, have you ever thought about ministry? That would be like so obvious to me.
Yeah. And it wasn't super obvious to me. And it was me and two other guys, two buddies of mine. We were like co-leading. And it was just something that we were doing. It just felt like normal. Like it didn't feel extraordinary.
Well, of course it would feel extraordinary to you. I mean, because you're just doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like nobody says, hey, man, like, have you ever thought about what it would be like to be a pastor or a ministry?
No, it's so funny. It never occurred to me until... late college. I know. Isn't that strange? Yes.
Well, I think it's amazing how leadership forms in our lives, you know, and how sometimes something's really obvious to everyone but us.
Hmm.
Sometimes something really obvious to us isn't obvious to anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it's weird how, did either of those buddies end up doing anything with ministry? The guys that led the stuff with you?
Mm-mm. No.
Fascinating. Okay.
Isn't that fascinating? I think Matt Matthey helped a lot in that whole venture. Let me just say, and that guy was super gifted gatherer of people.
Oh yeah.
And had such a profound impact on me in my teenage years. And he just was like a real evangelist, like people just magnet towards him.
Yeah.
And so I think some of the energy of gathering was him, but it's not like he was there every week.
Right.
And so it would be worth me revisiting just even in my own memory with these buddies, like, what were we doing? What did we think we were doing? But we were seeing people come to faith and we were like, you know, people called us the Bible boys at school and like they would come and talk to us when things at home weren't going well. And looking back on it now, it's like, there's so much of who I am now that was sort of existent in a small form at the age of 16 and 17.
Well, totally. You know? I mean, because I think to myself, if there was a 16-year-old in our church that was piling 70 people into their house, I mean, I would be like, what is this? How is this happening? And what do you need from me? And have you ever considered a life with ministry? I'd love to help you think about the kind of call that God has on your life. But I'm not saying that you should. I'm just saying somebody standing around should be like, that's unusual. I don't see that every day. And and how early in your life, God is already showing you there's a certain kind of favor to do certain kinds of things is remarkable to me. I mean, because that's not always the way it works. Like, people go do careers and then one day they're like, I guess maybe I should use these skills towards ministry or whatever. I mean, but anyway, okay. So
it's interesting that you say that because now, I mean, and we could probably fast forward a little bit, maybe come back, but like, I think I'm even thinking about there was a moment in late college where I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Right.
And that was really disorienting.
Right.
Exactly. Sort of like, this is the only thing I think is inside of me.
Yeah.
And now I look back on that and I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's what it feels like to be called.
Yes, precisely.
And now I'm able to help people think about recognizing that sort of inner thing.
Yes.
But when you start feeling it, it's so disorienting because you're like, I graduated with a philosophy degree. Totally. And I'm like making cappuccinos and I have no other plans, you know?
Bro, tell me about it. That's you and I together making cappuccinos. Other than I can't remember. I think you and I only had like two classes together.
Something like that.
And but we would talk about things, you know, whatever. Yeah. But my main recollection of being in the apartment with you is you were like really smart. All the professors loved you. You were super connected to like all things philosophy at Ohio State. And I was basically just trying not to work at all and get my degree.
Yeah.
So I was
I think I remember you showing up to a midterm. Yes. And I'm like, wait, you're in this class?
Yes, that's exactly how it went. That is my memory.
I, you know, I was like, I went to class every single time.
Oh, yeah.
I was so fastidious in that way. And then you show up and you roll in, probably in a pair of sweatpants and a ball cap. Yes. And I'm sure you did better than me.
No, I don't remember it that way. I remember you just being like, offended's too strong a word, but incredulous. Like,
yeah,
what are you doing, man? Like, this is like a real thing. Like, we're in like college. I'm like, it's fine. Yeah. I've been reading this stuff. I think I'm ready.
Okay. It turns out you were fine.
But then you and I are doing sort of parallel paths because I'm doing all this stuff with the Vineyard. Well, I was doing a bit with Crew and then with the Vineyard. So you start to have this sense of call. You're like, man, I think maybe God would call me to be in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this Vineyard history. Doing this thing with Crew, what were the kind of the key moments that started moving you toward the Jared that we know now, doing what you're doing now?
Man, I think a lot of that stuff came later. I think there was like a real season of just not really knowing which way was up.
Yeah.
You know, like even coming to Vineyard Columbus from Vineyard Cincinnati, very different culture.
Yeah.
I remember starting to see like, 96, 97, just some, you know, just what we would call just more sort of emphatic moves of the spirit and being sort of like, I never saw this. That wasn't really the culture down in Cincinnati.
I remember having a conversation with you actually in college about this. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And I met with, I remember meeting with Rich about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, bless his heart, like in between services, he's like sitting down with me and I'm just like,
yeah.
Like, tell me about healing. Talk to me about the gift of tongues.
Yeah.
Because that was not the culture of Crew at all. Mm-mm. In fact, they pushed pretty hard against that.
Yep.
So I had these two worlds where I'm just trying to make sense of, like, I've got my church world in the Vineyard. This is where I'm having all of this wonderful encounter with the Lord. I've got this other ministry world on campus. And they just didn't feel like they fit together.
Yeah. Well, they didn't. Yeah.
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 Well, and that's why I felt so disoriented by.
Totally. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we're building whatever made up thing called Joshua House, which again is caught in that same flow. There's all this energy that is, I mean, honestly, looking back, it's beautiful and there's cool things happening, but it is also fairly chaotic in the sort of.
Yeah.
Renewal sense, you know, like people shaking and crying and prophesying with like, you know, no real rails or boundaries for, you know, I mean, like it wasn't like
just the 90s, baby.
Exactly. It's just like kind of wild.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see how you're like, what do I make of all this? And so then as you're graduating with your philosophy degree, what are you thinking? Like,
I thought I was going to go on, well, I went on staff with Crew.
Yep.
And I did that for 2 years, even before I graduated. I don't know how they let me do that, but I went overseas with a team to Azerbaijan.
Yep.
Which is part of the former Soviet Union along the Caspian Sea, just north of Iran, actually. And that's where my wife, Jamie, and I, we were on the same team and we fell in love there and started dating and came back and got married. And then I had one more year of Crew staff where I worked at Ohio State's campus in the fraternity houses, sort of doing, actually I did a bunch of servant evangelism during that time. Mm-hmm. Like I showed up at fraternity houses and showed up with like a toilet cleaning kit and washed toilets and shared the gospel with frat guys and created a little tension in the Crew environment because they didn't really want to be people who were doing that kind of ministry. And so, and In the fall of that ministry year, I led a group of students down to apologetics conference at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Mm-hmm. And at that conference, I lost my faith. Mm. Like it just sort of all dried up for me. It was a series of events I'm happy to go into, but I had already been holding a bunch of tension with just the theological story that I had been handed down to. And then for some reason that season, most of the kind of threads that I was holding on to in terms of the story of the scriptures, they just began to fall apart. And so now I'm like, I don't know, a year and a half into marriage, thinking I was going into ministry, and I find myself like at best an agnostic.
Yeah.
So that was like a first real wilderness season for me. Mm-hmm. And hence those were the coffee shop years.
So the, what you're marking it with being at this thing. I mean, when you're at this thing and they're making their defenses of everything under the sun from,
yeah,
you know, here's what the Bible is, here's why we know Jesus, this or that. What is it about that environment or what's communicating that sort of crystallized? Like, was it the ethos of it? Was it that the arguments themselves were like strange? I mean, what started to unravel it?
I think it was, I mean, I can tell you exactly what happened. I remember it very vividly. And it was a room of about 300 people. Mm-hmm. And the topic was, what about the guy on the island? Remember that question?
Oh, yeah, totally. The pygmy on an island is usually what they would say. Yeah.
We love to say never hears anymore. The gospel.
Is pygmy a PC thing? But that's what it was. Yeah, it was.
And it was sort of like the easy answer at the time. And again, I don't know who thinks what these days in those kinds of places in apologetics. I mean, I just don't think about those things anymore. But
right.
At the time, it was really important to me that we have a better answer than, well, that guy's toast, you know. Right. I just think the weight of the question of sort of eternal things began to bear down upon me at that young age. And at the same time, I had all these philosophy friends that were like, you know, needing like real answers.
Yeah. And that's a real question. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a real question. So I don't know. I don't know why. It just felt like the pressure of that question in that room. Mm-hmm. And we went back and forth, me and this guy, in front of a bunch of people. And I can't explain why it all fell apart, but it just, there are probably other things going on in my heart and in my life that just created that pressure. But I walked out of that room and I sat on a bench and I just began to weep. Mm-hmm. And I just said to the Lord, like, if you have saved me once, you will have to do it again. Mm. Because if this is what this is, I just don't know that I can do this. And that, you know, produced quite a bit of spiritual depression and then some real depression. And that's when I met Jeff Connell. And he took me on walks through the neighborhood and talked to me about the spiritual puberty that I was in. And he pastored me so well in that period. Mm. And it took about a year and a half for me to piece back together theologically. Mm. Read a bunch of stuff, read a bunch of theology. Mm-hmm. And that's when I discovered the prayer book tradition and the rule of Saint Benedict. Mm-hmm. And there was something about this other stream of the church that just grabbed my heart. Hmm. And now I was thinking about ministry, and this is like after all of that.
Okay. So not to get too personal, but I think it would be helpful. Yeah. I mean, how does Jamie make sense of any of this? I mean, if I'm her, I'm like, hold on a minute, man. We entered in to this relationship under a certain set of agreements. You know, we were looking at the Caspian Sea, dreaming about how we were going to lead a nation to Christ, whatever you were doing at the time.
Right. Yeah.
And now I'm with like at best an agnostic, fairly depressed coffee shop worker.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've talked a little bit about that. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. The way I say it is that she married like a poster child for campus ministry. And a year and a half later, she's married to a guy who's like crying himself to sleep because I had my whole life was centered on Jesus, genuinely in college. I mean, I was like a Jesus guy. And then the light went out for me. And so I think as we talk about, it was a really hard season. Yeah. I think she didn't make sense of it is what I would say. And I think that's what she would say is that I don't think neither of us really had the tools for navigating that depth of human experience at the age of 25. And we start having kids and now the ball is just rolling. And so I think she would say that she didn't quite know what to do. And we were just trying to be faithful, you know, to, okay, well, we're married, we're having babies. And I think there was a deep sense of trust that Jared's going to figure this out. And we never left church. That's the thing is like, we were committed to going to church even in the midst of this whole thing.
Wow.
Because I think I knew enough to know that without the church, nothing works in our life with Jesus. And so I'm really grateful for Jeff and Central Vineyard Church. That was a wonderful place for me to land during that season.
Well, and what's it like going to church when you feel like that? I bet it's like something just short of torture. Like, what are these people talking about? What is this just all pretend? Like, these are nice enough people, but like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I was just the guy that sat in the back row and like just for like a year, I just sat there and kind of cried my way through that year. Which was really hard. You know, it's just hard to be that guy that shows up in that posture. But what a formative season for me. And again, I just commend, I think Jeff was like the pastor I needed in that season. Cared for me so well. And, just kind of helped nurture me back to faith in Christ.
Okay. How do you stumble into the prayer books? I mean, how does that even happen? Like, that's not laying on the bookshelf at Central Vineyard, I assume. I mean, so how do you fumble into that?
I think it was shortly after that season that I came across Phyllis Tickle's work. That sort of rearticulation of the Book of the Hours. And I began to pray the hours even probably before I felt like I was actually sturdy. And man, just praying the prayers that somebody else had written. And most of those prayers are drawn from the Book of Common Prayer. It just tethered me to something. It tethered me to a prayer language. I didn't have to show up with anything to say. I just showed up and prayed the office, morning, midday, evening prayer. And I think out of that experience, I think it was actually Jeff who handed me first the Rule of St. Benedict. And so I read the Rule of St. Benedict and I'm like, this guy, something about this just made my heart like, and I just got super curious about that tradition. And so I started reading, in that time period and some of the early church fathers and mothers stuff. And that was sort of the beginning of this like journey that I've been on over the past, I don't know, 15, 16 years.
Okay. So
20, I don't know what it's been. Jeez, I'm so old now.
Oh, I know.
What if the communities you're building could only be as healthy as you are? Better Together is back, and this year we're going deeper. Join Vineyard USA Associations July 21st through 23rd at North Jersey Vineyard for a transformational gathering where beloved community meets emotionally healthy leadership. Featuring Drew Hyun from Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, you'll discover how to lead from wholeness instead of woundedness and build communities where people don't just attend, they truly belong. This isn't just another conference. It's a reset for your soul and a vision for the community God's called you to lead. Early bird pricing is is available through May 4th. So don't wait. Learn more and register today at bettertogether.vineyardusa.org. We'll see you there.